بكم. I am الدكتور جالس السكران and I welcome you. I'm sitting alone in a room, but I'm in close proximity spiritually and psychedelically and also physically from the wonderful people. Aurora. Aurora, are you there?
I am here, Dr. Jalis.
Welcome, Aurora. It is so unusual to hear your voice when it is disembodied in this way.
Well, thank you for having me on the show and allowing me to be a floating voice on the airwaves.
Allowing? Oh, it is only an honor to have you with us. Aurora, of course, is a vocal specialist.
A vocal therapist, Dr. Jalis.
Indeed, a vocal therapist, performing vocal therapy on those who are in need of vocal therapy.
Or using the voice to soothe those who need any kind of therapy.
Well, we again welcome you. And we also have with us Professor Levine, Jewish mystic professor.
Thank you for having me.
Again, it is only a pleasure to be with you in such proximity.
Yes, my pleasure in joining you today is both very wide and deep and tall and round.
And the roundness in particular is what is so glorious about pleasure in general, to have round pleasure.
What's especially round about my pleasure in joining you today is the fact that I can see you, Dr. Jalis, through a veil of glass. And I can see Aurora here, on the other hand, through another veil of glass. Yet neither one of you can see one another directly. I am the ball that connects the various
ends. You are the transmitting bond.
You are the straw that stirs the drink.
The sphere that radiates the rays.
Well, it is indeed wonderful to be basking in your high-frequency radiation today.
And it is indeed wonderful to emit such high frequencies.
I sometimes feel that I'm rushing through life too quickly, that somehow I need to slow down to truly experience the experiences that I am experiencing. And I'm concerned, I think, that if I were riding on a platform at a high speed down a hill, that, what would your reaction be in that situation? How would you respond to the unsavory feeling of rushing through so quickly?
Well, in a certain sense, if one is rushing through space but not time, then one is actually increasing the length of one's life by experiencing more points of space in the allotted finite time frame of a life.
Yes, that's true, and also it can be so exhilarating to be experiencing so much all at once. But at the same time, you cannot pause for one moment and take in just one thing and understand it so intimately that it becomes a part of you.
But in a certain sense, pausing, I think, is a symptom of something wrong, the need for pausing. I mean, musicians, when they play music, when you're practicing, you can pause and think and correct. But once you're actually performing, you may not stop, you may not pause, you must just go with the flow. You must realize that the audience will not stop for you.
It's interesting you say this, Professor Levine. There are so many pauses, beautiful, wondrous pauses in music.
Right, but the pause there must be part of the performance.
And it can be. It can. The pauses can overwhelm one's spirit in such a beautiful manner.
Well, speaking about this issue of pauses in life and the length of life, I know that throughout human history, many people have tried to find some spring of youth, some elixir of eternal youth and life for immortality. And it seems like a basic quest for mankind to achieve lengthening of life. And there's this deep fear of the finiteness of our lifespan.
And perhaps the most direct way to address that fear would be to try to live more slowly.
Exactly, yeah. So one counsel I give to my own students is, instead of worrying about lengthening one's life, one should instead try to slow down life. Slow down and experience every second and every minute.
And that brings me back to that image of rushing down a valley on a hill and rushing down very quickly and speeding up. And the most correct response in that situation, I feel, the appropriate behavior would be to reach out and to touch as much as possible the things that are rushing by so that you may slow down and more fully be able to savor those
moments.
I did
try that on the subway once, and it led to my arrest. It was unfortunate.
It's so beautiful, this thing that you just said, because rushing downhill on a sled is so much exactly like life. In the beginning of life, most of us humans just want to go faster and faster and wish to be halfway down the hill. But once you approach the end, you are reaching out and you are touching everything around you, and you wish sometimes, oh, that I were back at the top of the hill.
I think this piano music really perfectly complements the discussion, Ayana. And of course, we have actually a pianist here in the studio performing this live, George. And George is doing a great job. He sort of senses the tone of the conversation, and he improvises accordingly, occasionally bending the pitch hither and yonder.
Yes, George is doing such a wonderful job. His compositions are very touching.
Well, and it's symbolic, because so much music, I think, now as we experience it, it's perfect. That studio quality, it's like watching a film. You know, life does not always have the most smooth rolling dialogue. There are inappropriate pauses and moments when things are misspoken.
Yes, I do find that I misspeak myself occasionally. But I think that's what's great about live performances, including live radio shows. We get to just throw our life into the microphone and have it tunnel through the airwaves and reach people's ears directly without any filter.
Precisely. And it's just in so many ways trying to paint a painting while rolling down a cart on a hill into a valley. And to focus on that when the tragedy of striking the brick wall that is waiting at the bottom of the hill is all you can really think about.
But when,
and when you are so close as I am, and when you are hurtling so quickly, death is really one of these things that you think about every day.
And there are those artists who, instead of creating art, they live art, so that their entire life itself is a sort of performance art. In that sense, this hurtling down the valley and the eventual splatter into the brick wall may itself produce a work of art. Perhaps the blood patterns on the wall may be considered a work of great genius themselves.
If you look at any of us, all of us, the children, the adults, the child molesters,
the donkeys,
all of us are works of art, impeccable, beautiful, strangely flawed works of art.
Well, this reminds me of this famous outside artist. I forget his name at the moment. It escapes me, but there was this film about his life. He grew up and he lived as a janitor without any formal training, grew up in an orphanage, and he created these wondrous works of fantastic art, oil paintings and fiction, and he never shared them with anyone till he died. What was interesting about his artwork was that he depicted many children in their full innocence, and he often liked to depict them in the nude. And curiously, he depicted both male and female children in the nude, and what was odd was that the female children he painted with male genitalia. And people wondered about this, why he chose to place male genitalia on the nude bodies of young girls in his art. And one theory is that he simply didn't know. He was so innocent, he didn't realize that the other gender didn't have the same package. And so he simply depicted, in his innocence, a package on each female body.
But his paintings can speak so much deeper than that. Throughout whatever mechanism that caused him to do so, it is sending a deeper message. Perhaps how similar we all are. Perhaps about the package within all of us.
And it is such a pure message that we are all born equally well equipped to touch others, and it really is profound. But I think that for now we should definitely try to touch the people of Boston,
or have them touch us,
to touch and be touched. So if you would like to touch us, the number is 617-253-8810, and we would surely love to expand our small circle. So let's bring someone with us now. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Yes, welcome, caller.
Hello, master.
Well, welcome to you also, master.
I just need to make a correction. The artist in question that you're referring to is Henry Darger. And his art is truly out of this world.
It really is otherworldly, I think is an excellent term, if it is an English word. And Professor Levine, this Darger, how did you come across Darger?
Well, I think I've mentioned this on the air before, but there is this great documentary film called In the Realm of the Unreal.
That is correct, yes.
And I do recommend this film. It's really a nice portrayal of his life and his art. And caller, do you have any strong feelings about, have you actually viewed his artwork? Does it make some, what kind of connection does it make for you? How does it make you feel?
Oh my goodness. Well, the innocence is just remarkable. It's like he never really knew what he was doing, maybe.
But yet he was able to achieve really wondrous works of art without seemingly knowing what it was all about, without any education, without any awareness. It was just a natural output of his. So it really, in a certain sense, showcases the potential of raw humanity.
I don't know about raw.
Well, it's interesting you say this, because I believe every human, having been exposed to their mother's heartbeat for months in the womb, have an innate sense of rhythm and of beat.
Beat, indeed. Is it really our belief, or did we just lose the caller?
Yes, I did hear an ominous click.
The click, which is indeed ominous. But let's go back to this really unusual idea that the sense of rhythm is something that we are not born with, but that we learn before birth. So perhaps, I mean, when we are talking about preconception, I'm sorry, post-conception, but pre-birth, so we are indeed born with a sense of rhythm, but it is the sort of thing that is learned.
Well, perhaps learned is too strong a word. We all of us have heartbeats, and when each of us feel our mother's heartbeats, when we are a part of her, then we absorb what is perhaps innate within each of us. Perhaps the rhythm centers are activated.
Well, of course, rhythm itself is something that can describe how we live our lives. Life itself has this rhythm to it. We wake up every day, we sleep at night, we eat, we drink, we go through these daily rituals. And I don't know about you or our callers, but I myself have tried to avoid sleeping at some point in my life. I went for several months without sleeping. And while it gave me a lot of time to pursue many endeavors, to meditate on life and to contemplate life and to learn how to paint with oil, it also, in a certain sense, disrupted my life flow. I didn't have that daily refreshment of sleeping where you sort of turn off your mental lights, you let your body go to sleep, and then you start anew. And I found that without this sense of daily renewal, daily rhythm, I felt a little lost. And I think this rhythm is something we have in both the daily sense and the yearly sense, something about those seasons. And I know those poor folks who live in California, for example, are unfortunately not able to experience this rhythm of the seasons, this winter, spring, summer cycle.
Then perhaps that could be partially the cause of all the great fires down in Southern California.
And perhaps also a cause of the large number of breast implants that are pursued there. I mean, I think there's something about having this natural rhythm given to you that makes you realize you don't need to augment your breasts. They're fine the way they are.
And there is rhythm in so many things. And I think it's interesting also that that light and sound, they're all matters of vibration and rhythm and repetition and periodicity. But because we are prepared to listen to particular frequency ranges, and also to view particular frequency ranges and to feel particular frequency ranges, that there must be great swaths of experience that we cannot quite see or feel or hear because they are outside of our ordinary organ realm.
Well, Dr. Jalas, I'd like to speak to this. I have done immersion studies where I lock myself in small rooms that are covered in carpet, and I place two speakers in the room and emit from the speakers noises of incredibly high frequency, sinusoidal waves, the purest tones that human can imagine. And even at 30,000 hertz, 40,000 hertz, you can feel a vibration deep within you, a tingle at some frequencies, a shiver across your body. And there are certain frequencies, very, very low, that when played can allow you to see blurry images. And it also allows you to sweat, and I believe you are feeling into the spiritual realm.
And I've also heard it said, and I haven't experienced this myself, but I've heard that certain rhythmic patterns can unlock the sensual mysteries of mankind. And perhaps I take that back. Perhaps I have experienced it. Of course, the basic drum beat is something that can elicit deep, deep sensual and physical feelings. Probably going back to the earliest roots of humanity, we had fertility rituals which involved beatings of drums and dancing around fires.
Well, I also think that much of the experience of those sorts of frequencies are tactile, and yet so much of the drum experience now is done solely through the ears. But there really is nothing like dancing around a fire and feeling your gut rumble.
And hooting and screaming.
Precisely. Well, let's try again to touch and be touched. If you'd like to touch us, the number is 617-253-8810, and we are just so excited to be touched. Caller, marhaban. Caller,
hello.
Welcome. Welcome to the air, caller.
Hi, on the topic of frequencies, I just want to know, it's from a Boston native. And we see this healer, her name's Melody Parsa, and we practice a humming ritual, which, in my feeling, relieves the greatest stress, pulls out all the negative energy out of it. And I don't know if you guys ever practice this kind of frequency, this ritual.
Which in particular, is there a frequency that they have specialized in, caller?
I think we may have lost the caller again, but I think we did discuss once this practice that I developed of humming into the body of another human being. Of course, one can hum into the ear, and that produces secondary vibrations through the ear mechanism.
Well, and I'd like to speak to this. This is actually such a wonderful therapeutic technique. There are certain tones of hums which bring us to mind the womb. Vibrations that you can feel within your mother's body's low frequency hums.
So are you, I mean, myself, I was referring to body, direct body hums. Instead of humming into the ear, one presses one's lips against
places
the body.
The lips against the abdomen.
The abdomen or other parts of the body and hums.
The thorax.
And in the most amazing experiment that I did, I gathered together roughly 50 of my disciples, and I had them memorize, each one memorize the part of one instrument of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony, and I had them hum the parts of the symphony on my body simultaneously. 70 people humming on my body, each one playing the part of one instrument, and myself internally through my bodily organs experiencing this amazing symphony, being touched directly by these wonderful disciples of mine.
Well, I have performed similar experiments in the lab with grasshoppers, where I've had thousands of laboratory assistants place their lips directly on the wings or the antennae or the eyes of a grasshopper and experiment with humming or producing gurgling or garbling noises to see what what results these would have on the grasshopper. We found to our perhaps some there was some surprise in the lab there that very few of these experiments showed any positive or negative results on the grasshoppers, except when we hummed directly into the thorax, because apparently there is a sort of disease and illness that occurs in the grasshopper that is associated with vibration in the thorax. So they have evolved a sort of suicide apoptotic response to the vibration there. And also one of the students was deathly allergic to grasshoppers, and so
unfortunate events occurred, I assume.
Precisely, and it was very difficult to explain, but I think this is why there are much more regulations now for
these
performing
humming
experiments on insects.
And humming in general, I find it very difficult to get FDA approval nowadays for my humming experiments. But I did, in general, want to sort of digress on this issue of experience, rhythms, periodicity in life. And I think in the psychological literature, there are several types of ways one can experience, one can focus on something. One of these is the instrumental type of experience or focus, where one focuses on something or thinks about something as a means of achieving some other end. And this is probably what we do on a daily basis when we think about which direction we'll take when we drive in a car and so on. But then there's the direct experiential focus. And in the experiential focus, one becomes so absorbed through the direct, immediate experience, so wrapped in attention, that one forgets who they are, one forgets one's sense of self and one's being, and is fully absorbed in the experience of the external world. And I find this, to me, is one of the highlights of life as a human being. This is one of the reasons I enjoy being a human being.
Well, it allows you to release yourself from the ego.
That's right, and I think For example, when one hears a piece of beautiful music, or when one experiences this rhythmic beating, and I think these ancient rituals that humans performed, of these beats of a drum and dances around a fire, were all had the purpose of eliciting this rapt experiential focus.
Let's focus on someone new now. The number again, if you'd like to be focused on, is 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Welcome, caller.
Hi. It's funny, just as you had a caller calling about the humming experiments, I was about to call in about my personal humming experiences.
Okay,
and
sure.
I have this machine that makes a humming noise, and I was wondering if you wanted to hum with me. It makes the best, I find F sharp to be like my personal frequency.
Is that
F sharp, an excellent frequency. Why don't we bring a third voice in also to join
hum
and to hum,
we
possibly
hum together,
so
yes.
We can have a great humming.
Do any of our callers here have perfect pitch?
Oh, I have this machine. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, that's
well, let's and we should have another caller on the air with us. Caller 4, are you there?
Namaste.
Welcome, Arthur.
Happy to be here from the Bay Area, sending waves all across the states.
Journeying and traveling.
Well, Arthur, we are about to embark on a humming journey with our first caller here.
Oh,
are you
fully
ready?
Aware. I'm ready.
Please,
okay.
let us all hum. So, caller, please, if you could first demonstrate the device.
Okay, here it is. Can you hear that?
Yeah, that sounds great.
It's coming in very clearly.
Yes, if you could hum at that frequency with me, I think.
Caller, I think there was a pitch change there.
Was that a malfunction, perhaps, or a shift in the universal frequency of the universe that your machine picked up?
I think it might have been that universal shift you're talking about.
It's amazing technology these days.
Yeah, it's incredible. A friend gave this to me. It was a moment of synchronicity, really.
You know, I was just sitting on a subway train and got this big whiff of burning rubber, and just for a really long time, you could smell it almost to a point where you were wondering if it was displacing the oxygen. And it just really made me think how amazing it is to appreciate oxygen and just the little things you never take for granted.
And oxygen is one of those very little things that is always, always ignored. We assume oxygen is there. And in fact, my understanding is that our assumption of the presence of oxygen is such a deep one that people often will, when experimenting with inhaling various substances, will perish because it's one of these assumptions.
Yeah, people forget about it, you know? It's like, okay, if you want a real challenge, try to stop breathing or try to not go to the bathroom. See how far you get.
Really? It's true. I've never successfully stopped breathing for any, noteworthy length of or duration of time.
Now, I do believe that one is capable of achieving unconsciousness through lack of breathing. One, if one is strong-willed enough or maybe fuzzy-headed enough, one can knock themselves out through the lack of breathing.
Well, then it's...
Yeah.
Holding your breath is something that can be done in varying degrees depending on your level of spirituality. Many young children who I believe are very open-minded and pure, when submerged in water are capable of holding their breath for up to 5-10 minutes without
or even a breathing the water itself. And I think we actually lose our gills at the age of 2 or so, and it's not well known, but young children actually can develop the ability to breathe underwater if properly trained.
And is our first caller still with us with the tone
the humming woman,
the tone device? So I think we may have lost our first caller. So if anyone else would like to call in and expand this glorious humming circle.
It is unfortunate. I wanted to hear the story of that first caller and see how she used her humming device and how exactly it worked, whether it worked through crystals or some sort of electromagnetism.
Many such devices are currently being made with the basic electric or electromagnetic vocal simulation.
Yes, and that production appeared to be a square wave, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, so we seem to have a caller now, so let's see if we can bring him or her or them on with us now. Caller, welcome. Marhaban, caller.
1-7-9-0-8-3.
And it is a robotic caller, which is unusual to have someone just sort of...
Ah, that sounds like the answering machine.
It's possible. I've heard of such machines. Let's try again, another caller. Caller, welcome.
Welcome to the air caller.
I think this caller is ambient noise.
It's just so glorious to experience that sound, but it may be indeed that they will connect with us soon.
Yes, connecting through the air can be a very tenuous thing, I think.
So, Arthur, we were discussing earlier the lack of periodicity due to the lack of seasonal changes in California, and you just stated you are in the Bay Area at the moment.
Oh, that's not a coincidence.
Yeah,
these days especially, you can feel it either way, whether you... You know, whether you're sitting in a sweat lodge and picking in some waves or just enjoying a 4-horsepower blender.
And I speculated...
It's definitely apparent.
Arthur, I speculated that perhaps this lack of seasons was the cause for the inordinate number of breast implants that exist in California. That perhaps this lack of periodic changes in the weather would lead people to be unsatisfied with the size of their chest.
Well, you definitely have that going on in Southern California. And also a big proliferation of shoes. Hmm. Although around the Bay, I'm not so sure. You know, maybe Marin County, maybe Sausalito, which is closer to the water. So there could be something there.
Of course, the Bay Area also has its own idiosyncrasies.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of people have glaucoma. I don't know where that comes from.
Glaucoma relates to a problem with interocular pressure. It can occur due to an accidental strike to the eye or from other means.
Yeah, it's insidious. It comes into the skin, which Dr. Jollis is well aware of.
Precisely. That is the source, really, of all of
it. Kind of creeps up to the brain, yeah.
My expertise.
It's bad news.
It is bad. Let's bring another voice in to experience the glaucoma with us. Caller, marhaban. Caller.
Oh, it's the ambient.
It really is.
Hello?
Hello, welcome. Welcome, caller.
Thank you. It's so nice to be on the air with you.
Caller, it is so nice to be on the air with you.
When you were talking about humming, I thought I wanted to share with you a practice that I participate in with my husband in the evening. And I hum into his umbilicus and blow at the same time, and I'm able to achieve multi-tones And it's a, just a very...
A simultaneous humming and blowing.
And the umbilicus, yes, being the belly button?
Exactly.
I mean, and does this not... I mean, is... I assume you have been doing this for some years, because I think that ordinarily, if you were to suddenly start blowing and humming into that point, it, you know, the it's an excellent experience, but I think it can be too sudden if it is not done slowly. How did you come about this spiritual connection with your mate?
I don't remember how it evolved, but it might have been related to listening to Tuvan throat singing.
Now, I'm wondering about this, because my understanding was that in most adult Homo sapiens, the umbilicus was closed off after a certain point, but it seems that to achieve tones, one would need the air to come out somewhere.
Well, there are nodal points on the human body which are connected intimately to the umbilicus.
So there is a sort of canal structure, internal canal structure in the body that is connected to the belly button.
Yes, I assume it is commonly referred to as an innie.
An innie.
Well, no, there is a lot of internal machinery that is lost shortly after birth for drawing oxygen and sharing nutrients with the mother, but it remains long after birth, a point which is particularly sensitive.
So I was wondering, caller, are there any particular songs or melodies that you like to perform through this practice?
No, it's usually just one straight sound, or multi-tonal sounds.
No, I'm sorry, caller, yes.
They take on their own rhythm depending on the shifting of the movement, and so that some... One tone will get louder while the other one gets softer.
Mm. It sounds wondrously beautiful.
I highly recommend it.
Now, caller, very few people that I know are able to hum and to blow simultaneously. I think that requires an extraordinary amount of focus and dexterity. Have you always been able to perform or execute these sorts of
maneuvers?
I started as a child when I used to do sewing machine imitations.
Caller, a sewing machine imitation. It really sounds incredible, actually. Would you mind demonstrating for us?
Ooh, I don't know if I can do it, but I'll try.
Please, please call it. I really would. I'm very curious.
It'd be great if this could be shared with us.
I can't do it. I'm sorry. It's somehow the telephone.
It's not like an umbilicus.
That's true.
Well, I could suggest that if our caller wanted to record this type of maneuver, this practice, and send it to us, we would be happy to play it over the air.
We would be very pleased, actually, because I think that it's the sort of... I mean, do you think you would be able to perform the normal maneuver which you perform on your husband's umbilicus? Perhaps on the palm of your hand or into the handset? I'm not sure what sort of telephone you have.
It wouldn't work on the hand, because yes, it's the shape of the umbilicus that allows for the multi-tonal...
And I believe also the intimacy of the arrangement would be completely lost over the air and over the telephone lines.
Well, that definitely would occur.
But I think we achieve a certain intimacy, right? I mean, in a certain sense, what's great
but
about
we are,
this...
We're differently intimate.
We're intimate with everyone, and we touch everyone, and everyone touches us.
I would love to see a mother humming and blowing into a child's umbilicus to see if that connection, that strong, cord can be felt between the two.
One might be concerned in that case that if it were a boy, that he would end up being a sissy boy.
Now, that is a very old concern, and I think that Professor Levine and I went to the same school, which is the old school, on these issues, but you know, Professor, we have to be more sensitive to the current mores.
Yeah, that's right. I do apologize. Well, I did have...
I don't highly recommend trying it on a child because the child's umbilicus is so small that one might not have enough... The sound might not have enough room to move around.
I mean, and delicate, too. One might damage the umbilicus.
That's true, too.
But perhaps it would be more appropriate for a child to perform... this on another child's umbilicus.
Yes.
Being differently statured.
Now, speaking of these pressures one can feel either through the mouth or, as Arthur mentioned, in the eyes, these differences in pressure, I myself had this malady several months ago where I had a cold, some sort of sinus infection, and I decided nevertheless to go through my daily hand gliding routine where I hand glide down from the highest point, Mount Washington. And while I was hang gliding, I noticed that pressure differential, which one normally experiences in an airplane, except because of my sinus infection, my right ear could not pop properly and it couldn't compensate for the difference in pressure. And for about a week or two afterwards, I couldn't hear a thing out of my right ear. The pressure was just off, and I could only hear through my left ear. At first, I was concerned about this and it bothered me a lot, but eventually I grew to appreciate my left ear in a way which I had never appreciated it before. I think when we normally have this sort of stereo sound through both our ears, we forget how important and special each individual ear can be.
Well, and I believe that this was around the same time as your resolution of your Music for Human Beings addiction.
That's right, and I wonder if those things are connected. Somehow my appreciation for left-sided hearing helped lead me out of the abyss of my weekly post-Music for Human Being crashes. And I wonder, is our caller a frequent listener of the show, and has she ever experienced any emotional or spiritual crash afterwards?
Withdrawal physical symptoms. Or emotional?
It's an excellent way to prepare for going to sleep.
Hey, man. That's what it's all about.
Well, yeah. Of course, I'm sure it stimulates the dreams very much.
Maybe I'll allow you to speak with my husband and we can see if it stimulates his dreams.
Yeah, and I would be very interested also to hear about his experience as the recipient of umbilical vibrations.
Well, I can tell you that I am a musician in the more usual sense. I play guitar and I sing songs from the 20s and 30s and 40s, and my wife always appreciated this. But my wife herself is one of those people who starts a song in one key and sort of after a few measures it might shift to another key by itself and then end up somewhere else. It's always quite entertaining. And she never really thought of herself as a musician until we started this pre-nocturnal humming and multi-toning.
And it really is an appropriate phrasing, too, because, you know, why is music, you know, simply an accepted arrangement of sounds produced in an accepted manner on an accepted instrument?
Exactly. And what I found that was so appealing about it was how
theatrical and, like, poetic, you know, like, trochaic, and you think of rhythms in poetry, and you, and then things done with dynamics, and they, the whole sound, which might go for about, you know, a minute or two, takes on a quality, like a storytelling, and you sense the more exciting and the parts, and the parts that kind of are drifting off into a more ethereal space. And they really show just how really musical my wife really is.
And that music, I think, is in all of us somewhere. And this comes back to what I believe, was it Aurora who mentioned the beat of the mother's heart, and then likewise the beating of your own heart, which I know it's been some time, but has led me to wonder if any of our listeners have had a mother with an ailing heart, perhaps a Brady or a tachycardia, and whether this has affected their rhythm later in life.
Well, I think that for most people with those sorts of ailments, well, that's an interesting theory, but at the same time, 99% of the time, their heart must be performing normally.
Well, I have heard it said that if a musical performer, for example, a drummer, is very talented and very connected to the audience, and I think as a performer, those who have performed know that sometimes you feel that connection with the audience and sometimes you don't. It's some sort of weird spiritual effect. And if that connection is there, then that beat of that drum or the bass actually will affect the rhythms of the audience's heart, and they will all start to beat in rhythm with the drums. And that can cause this amazing feeling of communal harmony in the audience, where they, since their hearts are beating in unison, they feel as one, they feel as brothers. And I wonder, our caller's husband is a musician, I wonder if he has ever felt that he's had this kind of heart-beating connection with his audience.
Well, personally, I've had two FCs before.
Is that you, Arthur?
Yeah, that's me. Still here.
So, I wonder if your mother had any complications during birth or any... And this is
definitely.
One. Because...
Yeah, they needed to pull my head out with tongs.
Yes, but most of the time, when the mother's heart is not beating normally during birth, the child leaves that imprint.
They had to use pliers in my case. Tongs didn't quite have enough pulling force.
Like a tick.
It is difficult sometimes to change from one state to another, but unfortunately, callers and co-hosts, we are reaching the end of our time, our duration in this state. So thank you so much, Arthur. And is our other caller the musical umbilicus blower? Well, we thank her, and we thank the many callers that we could not get to in our limited time. And thanks also to Aurora once again for joining us.
Namaste.
And also thank you to Professor Levine, our
Shukran.
Dear brother.
Shukran.
I am a Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human. Music for Human is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. We are here every Friday at 7 p.m. on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. Stay tuned for Acts Beyond Words. Ma'asalama.
points for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Yaşarız. Ada biliyor.